This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Depending on your view, charter schools are the key to improving public education in America, including here in Massachusetts.
Or they represent a threat to public education, shifting money and resources away from schools that are open to everyone toward a small number of schools that serve a small group of students.
Proponents of the charter movement say it gives families choice.
Opponents say it creates a two-tiered system within public education, one for a select group of kids and another for everyone else.
Then there's the debate about whether they actually do a better job educating kids. Proponents say the evidence shows they do.
Opponents say they don't, because compared to traditional public schools, charter schools serve many fewer kids learning English or who have special needs.
None of this represents a new debate, but the disagreement about charter schools in Massachusetts is about to get a whole lot louder. That's because state lawmakers are considering a bill to eliminate a cap on the number of charter schools that can operate in low-performing schools. Districts.
Massachusetts currently limits the number of charter schools statewide to 120, but proponents say it's time to lift that cap, especially in the state's urban school districts, where there are long wait lists to get into these schools. Among those leading the charge to lift the cap is Paul Grogan. He's president of the Boston Foundation. He joins us now. And Paul Grogan, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Also with us is Richard Stuttman. He's president of the Boston Teachers Union. He's among those who opposes lifting the cap. And Richard Stuttman, it's good to have you here as well.
Same here. Nice to be here.
And listeners, where do you stand on this issue? We'd really like to hear from you, especially if you have experience in or out of the charter school system. The charter school genie is very much out of the bottle here in Massachusetts, has been for a number of years. Is it time to expand it in the Bay State? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Paul Grogan, let me start with you. You've been working on pushing this effort to lift the cap on charter schools in underperforming districts. How would this actually work? Fill in some of the details for us.
Well, right now, even after a successful legislative effort in 2010 to raise the authority for charter schools in Boston and several other cities, that authority has been reached. There's no further expansion of charters unless we do something. What this comes down to is, why are we limiting things that work? Unlocking the potential of inner-city youngsters who nationally continue to do very poorly in school is one of the most urgent problems in American society today. Charters are doing an astounding job, particularly in Massachusetts and even more so in Boston. Several very rigorous studies now show beyond any doubt that charters with identical low-income students are getting vastly superior results. But we also have to continue to invest and work to improve the regular Boston public schools. And the Boston Foundation is doing that. Part of the way the district is improving is importing some of the practices of charter schools, and part of the legislation we're proposing not only raises the charter cap in the cities, but extends further the successful practices that were enacted in 2010, allowing the district to improve more rapidly and therefore compete with the charters.
So let me ask you, before I come over to Richard Stuttman, who I know will have a lot to say about this, let me ask you about the evidence that charter schools really are working, because there have been a lot of studies over the years across the country, and on balance, it seems to sort of come out in the middle. But, I mean, what would you refer to sort of make the case that it's really working, this movement?
Well, the charter school movement is uneven nationally. We're very fortunate in Massachusetts to have a rigorous chartering process. Charters have to perform or they get shut down. In fact, several have. So a recent study by Stanford University shows that Boston has the best charter schools in the country. And if I could just read a sentence, in fact, the average growth rate of Boston charter students in math and reading is the largest we have ever seen in any city or state thus far. At the school level, 83% of the charter schools have significantly more positive learning gains than their BPS counterparts in reading and math, while no Boston charter schools have significantly lower learning gains. So we have a unique opportunity here in Boston to use an unusually effective charter movement, not only to extend this opportunity to more kids, but charters also have the useful effect of putting further pressure on the district to accelerate its improvement and change.
Well, Richard Stuttman, let me come over to you, president of the Boston Teachers Union. Paul Grogan laid out a pretty compelling case there for why this cap should be lifted. I know you've got some concerns.
Well, sure. First of all, I wouldn't disagree that, at least using the MCAS as a measure, that charter schools have done pretty well in Massachusetts, but that I would argue is not the best measure, and it shouldn't be the only measure. For example, the Match Charter School, which gets a great deal of publicity, came in first or tied for first in the state on the MCAS in ELA in 10th grade and in mathematics, and yet came in 262nd in the state on SAT scores. And I think it begs a question. How could the charter school that people look to as the top-ranking charter school in Massachusetts, arguably, do so poorly on the SATs? And I think it's easy to come to the conclusion that they over-concentrate on the MCAS because it's easy and more predictable than the SATs. So, of course, they do well.
But is that really your argument, that the charter schools really aren't as good as they
well,
say?
Well, no, no. I wasn't finished yet.
Okay, go ahead.
Thanks. No, I'm saying if you go by the measure that Paul's going by and that the Stanford study, the second Stanford study went by, we're talking about MCAS scores. I think there is more to an education than just looking at MCAS scores, and I would argue that dwarfs the high rate of achievement of charter schools on the MCAS. Secondly, I think having additional charter schools does provide some sort of safe haven for people who wish to escape the public schools. And I'm not sure that's a good reason to encourage their growth. And thirdly, there's the issue of resources. And very many of charter school kids, if not half or more, are actually coming from private schools, not coming from public schools, or as the charter school aficionados like to say, fleeing the public schools to go to a charter. They're actually fleeing private school tuition to go to a charter. Mm. And I think society has to ask itself, is this what we want to do, provide a safe haven and free tuition to people who wish to leave either a parochial or a private school in order to get a free public education in a quasi-private school setting?
But does the fact that, we hear about these long waiting lists, and I know that there's some dispute about how long these waiting lists are, but clearly there are more people that want to get into charter schools than there are spaces to allow them to get into. Doesn't that tell you that families across the state and in many low-performing school districts really want these charter schools? And so, in a sense, shouldn't we respond to them?
There are two sides to this.
Yeah.
We just did our own survey that was in the Globe, published, that it is true that charter schools do have a waiting list. It's about a fifth of what the charter schools say it is. The charter schools keep kids on the list until their class graduates. So a first grader going into a charter school who never has a chance to reject a charter school placement can continue on to up to 12th grade if the school continues to take children beyond kindergarten, which they all do. Secondly, a child can appear on multiple charter school waiting lists all at once. So they come up with a number of roughly 55,000 students waiting. If you cut it down more, and I've noticed in the charter school literature in the last week, as a result of the Globe report, they're now saying they had a wait list this year of 11,000. Well, the Boston Public Schools have a larger wait list. And we actually compared apples to apples. Boston Public Schools have a 12,000-plus wait list from last year. And our wait list, unlike the charter schools, is cut off in the fall. It doesn't continue on for up to a generation to keep the list padded. So I'm not saying that charter schools aren't desirable. Certainly that would be a foolish statement. They are to those who wish to basically leave private schools and some who wish to leave public schools. But on the other hand, public schools are also very desirable. And we have a Boston Public School waiting list in every grade in the city, in almost every classroom.
Hmm.
And that totals, if you want to compare it to the charter schools, we're talking that we dwarf actually the charter school waiting list in Boston.
Let me get Paul Grogan to respond to some of your points. And Paul, let me start with sort of this idea that that I think Richard Stutman was alluding to, that the public school system serves all kids, whereas the charter school system within the public school system serves a select group of kids.
Well, the opponents of charters have developed this highly misleading vocabulary that would lead you to believe that charter schools are like Exeter Academy or some highly selective program. In fact, charter schools are public schools. That often gets dropped from the equation. And they are open to everyone by lottery, by law. So these are not elite schools limiting their choices to a select few kids. That's just not the case. And it does a disservice to depict them in that way. You asked about studies a while ago. A study that we funded, done by a team of Harvard and MIT scholars a few few years ago, looked at identical populations of students entering charter school lotteries, and they followed the winners of those lotteries, those who got placed in charter school, and those who did not and went back to the regular public schools. They followed the academic achievement of those two like groups of students. Mm-hmm. And the results were just astounding in terms of the gains that charters produced over and above what the regular schools could do. As I said, we believe in the regular schools. We're doing what we can to improve them, but the fact remains that over half of the Boston public schools are so-called level 3 or level 4 or underperforming, whereas the charters are getting stellar results. It becomes morally problematic, in our view, to withhold the charter education from children who could be getting it when it literally alters the life trajectory of these children. There's no reason to limit something that's working this well. Let a full market form. Our departing superintendent, Carol Johnson, said over and over again, we have to compete with these charters and stop quibbling around the edges about sizes of waiting lists and supposed selectivity of charter schools. The demand is very real, and the voters are getting on board as well. Mass Inc. just released a poll of Boston voters. By 3-1, they favor lifting the charter cap completely.
Richard Subman, I wanted to ask you about that Mass Inc. poll, because, again, people seem to be voting in a big way or expressing a desire for this.
Well, I'd like to go back, if I can, to one of Paul's points about, I don't think he used the word morally reprehensible, but I think what he was suggesting is that it's not moral to deny children a quality education. And I would say it's not moral to encourage a segregated-like system as we have with charter schools. Now, again, the match school, only because the match gets the lion's share of the publicity, has 2.1% of its students limited English proficient. Now, what that means is, compared to Boston, which is over 30%, even though all children can apply to the match school, they don't all want to go to the match school. And even kids who go there, at the end of the day at the match school, those kids leave. Now, one last point on match, 81 children enter in sixth grade, 45 graduate. If a Boston public school had that type of forced attrition, or even voluntary attrition because the school was undesirable or couldn't meet their needs, we would be talking about closing that school down. Instead, the match gets credit, as it should, for educating the 45 kids who remain, but not for the 36 who have been forcibly attrited. Your question...
But is that really a good example for the system as a whole? I mean, I noticed that you're focusing on
It's a very accurate example as a proxy for the entire charter school system. The dropout rate or forced attrition rate in Boston charters parallels and mimics what I just said for the match. Mm. So it is a good example.
All right. Well, let's just get Paul. I mean, we'll come back to your other point, but I'd like to get Paul to respond to that.
Well, again, the match school, we think, does a wonderful job. What happens to the students who leave match is they go back to their district high school and graduate. So these are not dropouts. Again, there's been this kind of vocabulary around this that implies that these kids are dropping out of school. They are not, not by any stretch. But, you know, we'd all like to just place all of our bet on the regular public schools. But I think we have to acknowledge that while improvement is happening, it's happening very, very slowly. We just went through a process of spending years trying to come up with a new teacher's contract that would lengthen the school day. It failed to do so. The average charter school delivers more than 2 hours a day more instruction than a regular public school, yet we couldn't even make a dent in that problem through the contract negotiations. So people are understandably impatient when the lives of children are at stake, and that's why, even as we continue to push for regular school improvement, we've got to make more charter school slots available to that long waiting list of kids who want them.
Listeners, we're talking about whether it makes sense to lift the charter school cap. With us are Paul Grogan, he's president of the Boston Foundation, and Richard Stutman, president of the Boston Teachers Union. As you can hear, they represent different points of view on this issue. We'd like to hear yours. Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And gentlemen, if it's okay, let's go to a couple of calls because we've got a bunch of people who'd like to chime in here. Let's go to Bob from Charlestown. Bob, you're on the air.
Hi. I've called to convey the experience in Springfield.
And Bob, let me just clarify, because I'm just reading the note from my producer. You're Bob Markle. You're the
yes.
You were the mayor of Springfield, right?
I was the mayor and chairman of the school committee.
Yeah.
Shortly after Ed reform passed, Governor Weld came out and said, "You're getting the charter school. Make the best of it." So I think it's fair to say that most of the school committee, or all the school committee, and myself included, were opposed to the charter school concept. But we decided that rather than let the charter school build new facilities, that we would give them an elementary school that was performing poorly. So we gave them the 28th lowest performing elementary school out of 29 in the city. And they took over, and within 4 years, they were the fourth best performing elementary school, and now they are the best. Not only that, the city, after my tenure, allowed them to build a high school, and it is spectacularly successful. Every student who goes through their system, and this has been true for the last 6 years, is admitted to college. And it is so successful, in fact, that the political establishment in the city can be found to have their children in this school. We had an open competition, and we selected the Sabas International Charter School, which recently won, the Springfield School recently won a national award, and was rated one of the 50 best in the country.
Bob, I just want to jump in. So based on what you're telling me, obviously you're making a case for a pretty good track record in Springfield there. Would it be important to you to see this cap lifted? I mean, are you being held back because of it?
Yes, and here's the thing. The way I view it now is that as a middle-class person, I had a choice when my children were going through school. I could choose the public system, or a private school, or a parochial school, because we had the means to afford tuition. I don't see why inner city people, particularly those who are trapped in school districts with very low performing schools, shouldn't be afforded that same choice that middle class people have.
All right, Bob, you put a lot on the table here, and I'm really, really grateful. Yeah. I'd like to get Richard Stuttman maybe to respond to that last point in particular that Bob Markle was making there.
Well, you know, I'm glad things went well for the Sabas School in Springfield, but and I can't speak to specifics about it. You know, it's hard to respond to something from the former mayor who was chair of the school board. So apparently, you weren't proud of the schools while you were mayor, and you were glad to bring in the charter school. So I can't defend that or deny it.
No, but then let me just put the question this way. I mean, the point that he made, just this idea of why not give everybody this choice that that he was talking about, that a lot of middle class
because
people
it isn't everybody. It is a portion of kids. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Boston charter schools, again, you can deny these statistics, but please take a look at them. You will find very few special ed kids, at least of an incidence of degree of need that is represented in the public schools. And you will find virtually no limited English proficient kids. So I disagree that everybody is being serviced by charter schools. The charter schools ought to do better when they limit certain kids from entering those schools. And it's just like an exam school in Boston or an exam school anywhere. You are going to do better if you have total control over the student body, which is what happens.
Let's go to go ahead, Paul Rogan. Respond to that. I want to get a couple of other calls in first, though. After you.
They do not have the means to limit the student body. It is open by lottery to everyone. It is true that the regular public schools have higher populations of special needs and English language learners, but the charters are doing much better. And already they have 21% of the students in the Boston charters are English language learners. 12% are special needs. And in the case of special needs, there are some conditions that kids have where the regular public schools are just much better set up to deal with it than and have the resources than the relatively small charter schools. But in both cases, the percentages of kids are coming up. But the main point is charters do not practice selective admissions. That's just false.
Let's go to Patrick, who's calling from Worcester. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering why we're having this discussion at all. Why are we talking about different tiers in the public school system? Why don't we take whatever works best? You know, we don't have to have charter schools and not charter schools. Why don't we just, you know, filter what's best, what works for best in both types of schools, and combine the efforts and spread it out over the public school system. It seems to me like this is you know, the charter school takes money and puts it into private company hands, for one thing. And it also seems to me like it's kind of a, it kind of whiffs of a little bit of a union busting tactic. And I'm not in favor of teachers' unions across the board. I'm opposed to tenure, automatic tenure, and, you know, other things that teachers' unions fight for that most people don't agree with. But I do think that teachers' unions are okay. I don't have a problem with teachers having a union. But, you know, it seems to me like we're still talking about these things year after year after year. And when charter schools came out, they claimed that they weren't going to be practicing this type of separation of, you know, the claim was that this was going to filter in through the whole school system. But
all right, well, Patrick,
separate.
Yeah, no, Patrick, you put a good thought on the table there, and I actually, it brings me to a question that I wanted to ask Paul Grogan. And Paul, considering what Patrick said, you know, this state has begun enlisting some of its best charter school operators to help turn around struggling traditional schools. So, you know, I'm wondering, why not sort of do more push for what Patrick is talking about? That is, focusing on what works for all these schools rather than, you know, expending this, I guess, political capital in trying to lift this cap.
Well, I would argue it's not an either-or, but in fact, as the caller suggests, there's a very energetic effort now going on, particularly in Boston, to spread what works. And so there are various categories of schools, turnaround schools that need special help, innovation schools, and others, which resemble the charters in that they give more authority to the people who are actually in touch with the children every day. The principals and the staff and the faculty actually control their own personnel, control their own budget. They're free to alter the length and structure of the school day. They're really empowered. And surveys show that charter school teachers' level of satisfaction, even though they're paid less than regular Boston public schools, is very, very high. So it's about creating an environment in which the professionals in touch with the children every day are really making decisions, and it's really working. And that's why this legislation extends those categories of schools, as well as lifting the charter cap. But until the schools show that they can improve more rapidly, we've got to hedge our bets by not restricting the growth of the charter school movement. Mm.
Richard Stubman, I'd like you to respond.
Well, that's you know, that's one way to look at it. But I think if you look at the mass of ideas and innovations that have come from the charter schools directly to the public schools, you're really limited to the extension of the school day. And we have in Boston right now 40 schools with an extended school day. And we have found that it's good, but it's not great. And what's more important than lengthening the time of the length of the school day is what goes into the school day. So the fact that a charter school has an extended school day in and of itself doesn't mean that it is doing its job of replicating and promoting good practice throughout the city. Now, having said all that, we are in favor of an extension of the school day in Boston for a few reasons, one of which would be to better mirror the parents' workday, and secondly would be to provide both academic and enrichment activities for children. We're also in favor of getting paid for our time, and I get a real kick out of people who say, oh, no, they don't need to get money. They don't need to be compensated for their extended day, when all lawyers do, all accountants do, doctors, nurses, and fill in the blank. So I think it does a disservice to what we're asking for, by saying that the fact that we need to get compensated for our extension of the school day, when we all know that teachers work an additional 2 or 3 hours a day every day at home, to do that is a disservice, really, to working people around the city and around the country.
Well, gentlemen, there are going to be hearings tomorrow on Beacon Hill. I know the bill that we're talking about, proposed by Senator Barry Feingold and Representative Russell Holmes, this would abolish all caps on charter schools and charter school spendings in 92 low-performing school districts. That's going to be getting underway on Beacon Hill tomorrow, and this debate will continue. I want to thank you both for coming in and sort of kicking it off for us this round of the charter school debate. Thank you both very much.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
Paul Grogan, president of the Boston Foundation, and Richard Stutman, president of the Boston Teachers Union. Stay with us. The Kennedy Library gets a treasure trove of documents from Ernest Hemingway's Cuba days. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Trakrabarty. Stay with us. There's more Radio Boston still ahead.